Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Carolyn.
And a theme for this week is ejaculation.
/ Valentine's Day.
That's right. A most romantic topic. And we spent a lot of time puzzling over female ejaculation and... guys, we haven't forgotten about ejaculation for you, although this time we present another puzzle, which is premature ejaculation, because this is something that affects even more men than female ejaculation affects women.
Right. And it is definitely something that has been pathologized. When we, you know, Kristen and I talk a lot about women's health issues or concerns that have been pathologized and whether it should be or not. And this is really no different. I mean, there are men who experience ejaculation very, very soon in the sexual process and who seek out medical treatment for that. But then we're going to get into the issue of like, okay, well, how do you define it? So many people define premature ejaculation differently. And is it just ejaculation that happens early? Or is it simply when your sexual partner is not pleased?
Yeah, there's a lot of complexity to premature ejaculation, and as well as the psychological repercussions too. Mm-hmm. So let's get down to some ejaculation basics, shall we? Because it happens really fast at first, at least in terms of the fluid traveling through the urethra. It moves through the urethra at an astounding 28 miles per hour, or 45 kilometers per hour for our Canadian listeners. Hello.
Well, Kristen, that's faster than a Model T Ford.
My goodness.
My goodness.
But then it slows way, 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 way down as it exits the penis and enters the vagina or the anus or wherever it's going.
Right. It slows down to, get ready for this, 0.0011 miles per hour or 0.0017 kilometers per hour. And famed sex researcher Alfred Kinsey performed an experiment that found a long distance ejaculation record of 8 feet. I'm not kidding. He like laid down sheets on the floor and was like, fellas, have at it. 8 feet. That's pretty impressive considering how much it slows down before it exits, or like as it exits the urethra.
And it's usually not a whole lot of fluid, about one or two teaspoons on average, but there is a lot of stuff in that semen.
Yeah, let's look at the nutritional information.
Yes, sperm only makes up about 1% of semen. Then you have secretions from the prostate gland and vas deferens, as well as fructose, water, ascorbic acid, citric acid, protein, enzymes, zinc, phosphate, bicarbonate buffers, and red number 4. No, not red. No artificial colors or sweeteners.
It's organic.
It is 100% organic.
But in terms of what's going on physically when this is happening, So we get the penis engorged with blood. The scrotum contracts and applies pressure on the testicles that are then drawn into the body as the fluid travels from the seminal vesicles outward.
Yeah, so it's a whole assembly line almost.
It's a pulley system.
To get it out there. So we've established what ejaculation is, but what is premature ejaculation? Technically, it's one of three forms of ejaculatory dysfunction. There's premature ejaculation, retarded ejaculation, and retrograde ejaculation, which is when it goes back rather than forward. And it's actually listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatric Disorders.
Right. And it's defined as ejaculation occurring without control on or shortly after penetration and before the person wishes it, causing marked distress or interpersonal difficulty. But the thing is, we don't have a 100% standard definition of it because you have the whole question of balancing the timing of ejaculation against your partner's or your own satisfaction with how long it takes. For instance, the American Urological Association defines premature ejaculation as occurring sooner than desired, either before or shortly after penetration, causing distress to either one or both parties. But Masters and Johnson, also famed sex researchers from decades ago, provided a pretty subjective definition. They said that it was the man's inability to inhibit ejaculation long enough to satisfy his partner 50% of the time.
Well, it's the satisfaction, sex partner satisfaction, and also that psychological distress that it causes. You need to have that distress factor in there, too, clearly to meet that DSM definition. So, and that's something that we haven't talked about that much on the podcast. We talk a lot about women, female sexual function and psychological distress, but this is an arena where we really get into male sexual function and psychological distress. But there are some more concrete guidelines, although they are quite heteronormative as well, Caroline.
That's right. One of the characteristics of premature ejaculation that really plays a huge role in defining it is called the intravaginal ejaculatory latency time, or IELT. So basically, according to this idea, you are experiencing premature ejaculation if your IELT is always before or within about 1 minute of penetration or 8 to 15 thrusts. But like Kristen said, the fact that the first letter in a defining characteristic of premature ejaculation is I for intravaginal, it's pretty heterospecific.
But keep that in mind because we're going to talk later in the second half of the podcast about how sexual orientation may or may not play into premature ejaculation and the more subjective guidelines. But moving into more of the medical specifics of premature ejaculation, there are two widely recognized types, primary, which is lifelong premature ejaculation, and secondary, which is more acquired or situational. And there are two additional proposed types of premature ejaculation, which are normal variable premature ejaculation, which is inconsistent and situational, and then premature-like ejaculation, which contains subjective perceptions of premature ejaculation, although your intravaginal ejaculatory latency time is normal. In other words, someone feeling insecure because he thinks that he's coming too soon, even though his IELT is normal, within the normal range.
Yeah.
Which is around 5 minutes.
And speaking of rates and what is common and what is normal, the prevalence rate of premature ejaculation is 1 in 3 men. And according to a 2007 global survey, about a quarter of men across all age groups struggled with it. And a 2005 survey calculated an even higher prevalence rate of 30%.
And we should mention that there is a 30% co-occurrence rate of premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. And we're not going to get into erectile dysfunction in depth in this podcast because it kind of deserves its own podcast. But in case you're wondering, those things can go hand in hand, but not all the time. It's actually less common than you might think. But not surprisingly, it can have a negative impact not only on the person who is dealing with perhaps a low IELT, that intravaginal ejaculatory latency time, but also on the relationship with that person's sex partner.
Yeah, this is coming from a 2014 study published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine, which we cited quite a bit in our previous episode on female ejaculation. But they found that 9% of women reported a low sex drive and sexual dissatisfaction when they were with a man who suffered from premature ejaculation. But 48% of these women said that the real problem was that their partners, their sexual partners, weren't paying enough attention to their needs, like kissing and caressing, and instead were more focused on boosting their performance or duration.
And almost a quarter of those women also reported that the man's ejaculatory problems led to relationship breakups. And that's something just in routine Google searches that we were doing, looking for sources and experiences with premature ejaculation, that came up a lot on message boards in terms of guys being distressed about either getting into relationships or having relationships that broke up because of this issue. So it's a very real factor in some relationships, for sure.
Right. And this leads many people to seek out treatment. And some of the typical treatments include behavioral things like the squeeze or the stop and start technique, which is basically stopping when you feel like you're about to reach orgasm, letting the urge pass, and then continuing. The squeeze technique is basically squeezing the penis until that urge subsides and then continuing. There's also the application of topical anesthetics, which for me as a lady with lady parts just makes me feel squeamish.
Because it's numbing.
Yeah.
Cream, like a lidocaine.
Yeah. I don't want lidocaine anywhere near my lady bits.
But that's also, you find that kind of stuff too on certain kinds of condoms that mm-hmm. are the long last condoms. Mm-hmm. It contains that kind of stuff to desensitize the penis some so that they'll last longer.
True.
And in addition to topical anesthetics, you have oral medications, including antidepressants. This mm-hmm. is actually becoming a more and more common prescription for premature ejaculation, because we hear a lot about antidepressants depressing sexual function as well. And for that reason, certain antidepressants, particularly an SSRI called paroxetine, has been found to delay ejaculations. There was a randomized control trial which found that paroxetine delayed ejaculation from 1.5 minutes to 7.7 minutes. So pretty significant. And on top of that, too, because of the psychological aspect and because of the relationship aspect of it as well, counseling might be involved as well. But there are also some experimental treatments some people are looking into, too. Right, Caroline?
Yeah, things like virtual reality treatment and also a desensitizing band that can be worn during masturbation. Not to mention herbal treatments that people seek out. Things like epimedium leaf extract, ginkgo biloba, Asian ginseng root. Who knows?
But probably not horny goat weed, Caroline. But like female ejaculation, premature ejaculation has been a medical mystery for a long time. And what's fascinating to see, though, with the history of premature ejaculation, what doctors think about it, it's actually gone through certain distinct phases in terms of kind of the overarching model that doctors and scientists think that it originates from. And this is coming from an invaluable paper by Marcel D. Waldinger called The History of Premature Ejaculation. And he goes all the way back to ancient Greek writings that mention ejaculation ante portas,
which means ejaculation before the gate.
Before the gate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't quite make it into the gate.
Right.
Outside the gate. But it wasn't until the late 19th century where we have it first described as a disorder. So in 1887, you have the first case of, quote, rapid ejaculation in medical literature.
Yeah, and then in 1908, we get the first psychoanalytic paper written about it by a student of Freud that paid a lot of attention to premature ejaculation's effect on the female partner. So this is when we first get into like, other people might not be happy with it.
Yeah, and this kind of kicks off the first major period of premature ejaculation classification that Waldinger identifies, which is from 1917 to 1950, which is the neurosis and psychosomatic disorder phase. So you have premature ejaculation thought to be a neurosis linked to unconscious conflicts, often treated with psychoanalysis. And you have the term ejaculation praecox being introduced to describe premature ejaculation. So it's not yet called premature ejaculation because, I mean, it's more of a they think it's more of a psychological thing.
Right. In the 1930s, we actually get the first drug developed to treat erectile dysfunction, and it's called Testofortan. And then in 1943, a German endocrinologist by the name of Bernhard Shapiro, sorry for my accent, proposed the psychosomatic model. And this basically says that premature ejaculation is a combination of an over-anxious constitution and an inferior ejaculatory apparatus as a point of least resistance for emotional pressure. This is also when we get the early recognition of the two types of premature ejaculation, primary versus secondary. And Shapiro was also the first to note, he didn't call it genetic, but he was the first to note that men who experienced this issue also had family members who were likely to experience the problem also.
But in 1950, we move out of psychosomatic and into more of the learned behavior model. And this would last until the early 90s. And this learned behavior viewpoint was really developed by Masters and Johnson, who focused on the performance anxiety driven cycle of premature ejaculation. So if it happens, you kind of freak out and then you're worried about it. And then the next time you start having sex, you start worrying that it'll happen again. And so the cycle continues. And so through that, they developed that squeeze technique to almost retrain the penis. And with the squeeze technique, not only do you squeeze the penis when you to stop sex, when you think that you're about to prematurely ejaculate, you also sort of let it detumesce, de-engorge a little bit, and just kind of chill out. And then you start going again, and it will re-engorge. And then you just do that over and over again, which apparently has its successes, but also obviously has its detractions as well, because it can inhibit the flow of sexual activity.
Right. But their squeeze technique actually was built off of an earlier stop-start technique, which we mentioned earlier, which was developed in 1956 by, I'm not kidding, urologist James Siemens.
Oh, man, that's perfect.
Yeah, he was the first to describe this stop-start masturbation technique, not necessarily just with sex, but also with masturbation. But Masters and Johnson were saying that this performance anxiety really stemmed from the fact that they believe that the men who experienced it had relied on rapid ejaculation and rapid orgasms earlier in life, and that it just became a habit that had to be unlearned. So basically, if you're used to either sneaking in sex or masturbation so that nobody catches you, and you're used to like, oh, this has to be fast, it has to be fast, it's just a habit that you've developed that has created a lot of performance anxiety in your adult life, and it has to be unlearned.
But then once we get to 1990 to 2005, we enter the neurobiology and psychopharmacology phase. And this is when we start learning about how lifelong premature ejaculation, that primary premature ejaculation, has neurobiological and genetic underpinnings. And this is also when those SSRI or antidepressant treatments begin to emerge. And in 1998, notably, we have the first successful oral drug developed to treat erectile disorder, which is produced by Pfizer, which is going to lead to a new medical discipline of sexual medicine. Because, you know, if you're Pfizer, you're like, hey, this seems like a common problem. We're going to make a pill, going to make a lot of money off of it.
And that leads us into the present phase, which really focuses on the pharmaceutical industry and pursuing the genetics behind this issue. And so this is when we've gotten a lot of DNA research that reveal more links with that lifelong or primary premature ejaculation.
And so what scientists are looking more closely at now are certain genetic mutations in some men that might interfere with what's called the central serotonergic and dopaminergic system, your serotonin and dopamine, in other words, that is then associated with the mechanics that influence your IELT. So they think it has to do with your neurotransmitters that are released and produced as you're having sex as sort of setting off that physiological premature ejaculation. And they have uncovered some genetic links, but it's not fully understood yet, probably because of the different kinds of premature ejaculation that men experience, as well as the still the subjectivity of it, this kind of vague definition that happens. And we're going to get into more of those nuances of premature ejaculation and things that might or might not influence it when we come right back from a quick break.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
And now back to the show.
So in the first half of the podcast, we talked about what doctors know about premature ejaculation, which is a lot, but still not enough to know exactly how to precisely treat it. For this commonly cited statistic of 1 in 3 men experiencing it. But we do know that masturbation is not a likely culprit. Guys, if you're experiencing premature ejaculation, masturbation can actually be your friend.
Yeah, because masturbating before sex can slow down this whole process. Dr. Debbie Herbenick over at the Kinsey Institute says that masturbation can actually help men retrain their ejaculatory habits by employing that stop-start method that we mentioned earlier. But we mentioned the whole heteronormative definition of, for instance, the IELT earlier. So what about that issue? What about gay men versus straight men? Is this a global universal man problem, or is one man more likely to experience it over another?
Well, the question is a little difficult to conclusively answer because, as with a lot of research on sexuality, the framework for premature ejaculation has largely been among hetero men having sex with vaginas. But there was an article published in GQ about premature ejaculation that interviewed a sex columnist who said that gay guys rarely inquire about premature ejaculation, which prompted Dan Savage to wonder whether it's more of a straight guy thing, because, as he wrote, there is no premature, in quotes, ejaculation when it comes to two guys, because it's just, as he sort of framed it. And Dan Savage, for those of you who don't know, is a really well-known sex columnist and controversial to some who are cringing that I'm mentioning his name on this podcast. But he is a gay man and has experience directly with gay sex. And from his standpoint, there's just no premature about it because of the nature of gay sex.
Right. It's an issue of efficiency.
Yes, he put it that way.
Right.
Yeah. And clearly that's going to be a different dynamic when it comes to men and women having sex, because as a lot of us know, it can often take longer for women to orgasm. And the fact that 2 in 5 women rarely come solely through vaginal penetration.
Right. And so studies have found that premature ejaculation is the least reported of the sexual dysfunctions among gay and bisexual men.
Yeah, there was a study looking at this in April 2013. It was focused specifically on sexual dysfunctions in Belgian HIV-positive gay men. So very specific study sample. And among that study population, there was an 18% premature ejaculation self-report rate. So lower than that 1 in 3 number. But again, maybe it's just because we haven't looked into it closely enough.
Yeah, there was a 2009 study in the International Society for Sexual Medicine journal. And 42% of the respondents in the study reported some form of sexual dysfunction. And the main ones were performance anxiety, low sexual desire, and pain during sex. Premature ejaculation just was not one of those main sexual concerns.
Yeah, and they compared this, the study authors compared it to another study among straight men who had a 21% report of past year premature ejaculation. So still, though, not as high as 1 in 3. But the study authors wrote that, quote, comparing sexual dysfunction symptoms in men who have sex with women and men who have sex with men and drawing conclusions about their differences may not be appropriate, as the two groups have different cultural norms, interpretation of sexual dysfunction questions, sexual expectations, and gender sex partners. Mm-hmm. So we might not be able to draw inferences from premature ejaculation from gay men based on the commonality of it among straight men, because it's a completely different kind of sex. But really interesting to see how perhaps intra-anal ejaculatory latency time might be quite different than intravaginal ejaculatory latency time. But the question that brings up once we look at this nuance of sexual orientation and how that may or may not so much change this number, it leads to this question of whether it is really as prominent of a dysfunction as we think of with that 1 in 3 number that is bandied about so often, or whether it's something that we are slowly being primed to think of more as a dysfunction because we are in the pharmaceutical age.
Right, where pharmaceutical companies are creating a medical solution, quote unquote, to all sorts of quote unquote problems.
Yeah, and really we have Viagra to thank for that because Viagra is such a moneymaker.
Right, and so, yeah, pharmaceutical companies are looking at the profits from Viagra and thinking, well, God, if I can prey on other sexual insecurities, then surely I can make a pretty penny as well. And so there was this 2009 New York Times article that talked all about this and mentioned that there's little actual concrete evidence to suggest that there is an epidemic of premature ejaculation in the way that drug commercials or men's health articles will tell you that there is.
And the article also called into question that 1 in 3 statistic. It said that it's actually based on a 1999 report on sexual dysfunction in the U.S., which has been disputed by some sexologists because it was based on a sociology survey from 1992 that was not created by epidemiologists to answer sexual health questions. Mm. So that 1 in 3 statistic might not be so concrete after all.
Right, because the study from 2012 in the Journal of Sexual Medicine, our favorite journal lately, found a 13% self-reported premature ejaculation prevalence rate.
And this was focused on an Asia-Pacific region sample population. So it also, though, seems like whatever, if you change the population group that you're looking at, the numbers start to change too, which is really interesting.
Well, yeah, because so much of this has to do with the very subjective idea of sexual satisfaction. And what does sexual satisfaction mean for different populations, both geographically, but also in terms of your sexual orientation and who you prefer to have sex with?
Well, and the kind of sex too that you are watching. This was something that I didn't find any study data on, but I had to wonder whether the accessibility of porn has maybe artificially inflated premature ejaculation self-reporting. Maybe that is where that proposed category of the premature-like ejaculation, where guys are perfectly in the normal IELT range, but they think that they're coming too soon because they're watching porn, where perhaps guys are lasting a really long time.
Right. And a psychologist who's quoted in that New York Times article points out, like, hey, everybody, calm down. There's fast and slow versions of people in all categories of life. They say they're slow and fast walkers, slow and fast eaters, slow and fast breathers. And so when you tell someone they're a fast ejaculator, it makes it sound like there is a right time to ejaculate. And if you ejaculate before, it's a medical problem.
Yeah. So a lot of the research left me, at least, with a number of question marks.
Like, yeah.
Clearly this is an issue for a lot of men and a lot of the sex partners of these men.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like that 1 in 3 number is being thrown in our faces a lot for a very specific marketing purpose.
Yeah. And I mean, you have both men and women being told that they are dysfunctional when it comes to sexuality, because you're telling a lot of women that you're taking too long, or why haven't you had an orgasm? And you're telling men are being told, well, you're orgasming too fast and you're not giving your partner a chance to achieve orgasm herself. And so, I mean, everybody's insecurities are sort of being played upon.
Yeah. And this is still in the backdrop of a culture and society where so much of sex, even though it might be out, you know, we might consume a lot of porn, we might see sex in TV and movies, but in our day-to-day lives, talking about sex is still largely taboo. Sexual communication is still, you know, a big challenge for couples, whether they're one-night stand couples or long-term couples. So, yeah, it's definitely a complex issue that I think we'll need more than SSRI antidepressants to solve.
Yeah.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
But we're also talking about this as two humans with vaginas,
mm-hmm,
who don't experience this kind of physiological mechanism at all. So, fellas, we really want to hear from you on this issue, or anyone who has been in a relationship where premature ejaculation has been an issue. We want to hear from you on this topic. MomStuff@HowStuffWorks.com is our email address. You can also tweet us at MomStuffPodcast or message us on Facebook. And we've got a couple of messages to share with you right now. So I've got a letter here from Elaine about our episode on a brief history of panties, and she pointed out that she has no problem with the word panties, so thank you for noting that, Elaine. But she had some insight into the woolen underwear that we both cringed at the thought of. She writes, about the wool, It actually breathes much better than cotton and is highly absorbent, so absorbent that for moms who use cloth diapers, there are wool covers called soakers that absorb any leaks. Alpaca is super soft, I believe. It's more expensive than sheep's wool, and I think it's up there with merino wool from sheep in terms of softness. So, if you've had an itchy wool sweater, it wasn't merino or alpaca, and maybe you have an experienced wool that can be non-itchy, but it's out there. So apparently, woolen undies could be quite comfortable and absorbent. She goes on to say, my Girl Scout troop had some training with our outdoor expert before our backpacking camping trip, and he told us, cotton is rotten and should be forgotten in favor of wool. Wool wicks sweat away from your body. Cotton retains sweat as you hike, for example, making you cold or just wet. Anyway, just sharing some facts about wool that explain why actually it may have made a lot of sense as an undergarment and is still used today for babies who wear cloth diapers. So thanks.
So I have an email here from Molly. She says, I was wondering if you'd done an episode that covers mother-daughter relationships and touches on some of the anecdotal stuff mom did tell me stories of your own as well as listeners. I heard and loved your podcasts on the history of the advice column, but I'm really curious about the history of advice given from mother to daughter. The demographic of your audience spans a large range of ages. I was thinking that generational differences are bound to pop up in terms of advice people receive from their mothers, and think that that could be a really interesting and funny thing to explore. Your history of panties episode made me think of this. You mentioned the cotton underwear talk, and it reminded me of a piece of advice my mother instilled in me. It's pretty silly the kinds of things you just take as fact of life without questioning science or reasoning when it comes from your mom. This kind of thing happened to me a few weeks ago. I was hooking up with a new guy and I had put my PJs on. My mom always stressed not to wear underwear or a bra to bed because, quote, it gives everything time to breathe. So without thinking, I climb into bed commando and he's a little shocked as if it's like some gift to him. He mentions it in this annoying, all-knowing tone, and I'm caught off guard. Immediately, my brain just goes, hey, this is a fact of life, and you don't wear those to bed. It's unhealthy. Instead of trying to explain this fact of life out loud, I just rolled my eyes and told him it seriously wasn't meant to impress anyone. So she says, thanks for reading. Love the show. It was one of the best discoveries I made this summer. I listened while I worked as a housekeeper. If that's not a loaded gender-related topic, I don't know what is. Shared it with my mom, who is really taken to it as well. Looking forward to hearing more great episodes in the future. So thank you for listening, Molly.
Mother-daughter stuff Mom Never Told You fans.
I love it. Intergenerational.
Love it. Mom7 HowStuffWorks.com is where you can send us your emails. And for links to all of our social media, as well as all of our blogs, videos, and podcasts, including this one with our sources, if you want to learn more about the science of premature ejaculation, head on over to StuffMomNeverToldYou.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.